Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this March the 3rd on the West Coast, March the 4th from the Central Time Zone eastward all the way around the world. So nice to have you with us this evening. We know we have some very special people listening in tonight because we're going to be exposing some truth. On 9/11/2001, our country was frauded and defrauded, and several thousand citizens from this country and from foreign countries around the world were murdered at the World Trade Center, at the Pentagon, and Lord knows where else. We've been following the 9/11 truth movement for a number of years, and it keeps running into brick walls, and probably the main reason for that is people are arguing over how it was done and not why it was done and who did it. Let me repeat that. People are arguing about how it was done and not why it was done and who did it. And tonight we're going to talk about why it was done and who did it with our special guests. They're both forensic economists, and I'm going to allow them to tell you, the listening audience, more about themselves. They can do it much better than I can. I brought web owner of HawksCafe.com, David Hawkins, and also CaptainSherlock.com, Field McConnell. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Hello, Don. Thanks for having us on.
My pleasure. David, I guess we could start with you. If you want to give a short background bio, autobiography to our listening audience so they know a little bit about how you got into this whole thing that we're going to talk about tonight.
Sure, Don. I'm a British and a Canadian citizen, and I've had an international career in the oil industry involved in oil well firefighting. My background is in engineering, and I arrived in British Columbia, Canada on the West Coast in 1992 after a career I'd worked on six continents, and I smelt corruption on a scale that I'd never seen anywhere else in the world. And fast forward to the period before 9/11, I was warning anyone who cared to listen about a company called McDonald Detweiler and Associates of Richmond, British Columbia, that seemed to have the technologies that would explain how the USS Cole got caught with a bomb in Aden Harbor. I even contacted head of security at the British Royal Navy. And I was able to track, because of a background in explosives and engineering, some of the things that McDonald Detweiler was capable of doing. And I believe that company in British Columbia, using international finance, developed the three networks that were used to execute the 9/11 attacks out of a base in Canada. So without going into details what those networks are, perhaps Field can have his say, and then we can pick up from there, Don.
Okay, sure. Thank you. Thank you. I do have some questions, but we'll let Field McConnell introduce himself. Welcome to the show, Field.
Thank you very much for having us, Don. I was born in 1949, and I grew up in an Air Force home. My father was a career Air Force pilot. My mother had been a World War II Army nurse. I went to schools around, high schools and public schools around the country. I graduated from Punahou School in 1967. That's the same high school in Hawaii that the resident of the White House, Mr. Obama, graduated from. From Punahou, I went to the Naval Academy, where I graduated in 1971 from Annapolis. After Annapolis, I spent 6 years in the United States Marine Corps, and Following my active duty service in the Marine Corps as an aviator, I joined the North Dakota Air National Guard and flew F-4 Phantoms and F-16s. Concurrent to my North Dakota Guard flying, I also had a 29-year career at Northwest Airlines that ended abruptly when some party put pressure on Northwest Airlines to try to get me to keep silent about the truth of 9/11, which, as you can see, their efforts have not been successful. I believe I'm connected to 9/11 at the hip because of my service with the North Dakota Air National Guard. They were the unit that flew F-16s over the Capitol on 9/11. My college classmate, Chick Burlingame, is alleged to have died at the Pentagon in command of American 77. And also I have a sibling who has an interesting history in the bureaucracies within Washington, D.C., and he or she may or may not have been entrapped, extorted, or coerced into participating on the other side of this 9/11. And I don't believe that it would be done voluntarily. So I feel it, in addition to trying to reveal 9/11 truth, I'm also trying to protect my sibling. And after I was forced to retire from Northwest Airlines, I went over to Kazakhstan, where I've been flying non-Boeing airliners with Muslim co-pilots for the last year.
Very interesting. Okay, Field, if I can just ask you to make sure you stay close to the mouthpiece on your phone.
Okay.
So you come through loud and clear. That's good. Thank
okay,
you.
Thank you.
Okay, you mentioned Chip Burlingame, is it, that was flying Flight 77. Well, there's no airplane, so what do you think may have happened to him?
I think American Flight 77 was taken out over the Atlantic and flown into a piece of protected airspace or sea space. The U.S. Navy and the U.S. Coast Guard had some coordinates that they were keeping free of maritime traffic and air traffic on that day, and I believe not only American 77, but also American 11 and United Flight 175 were all taken over the Atlantic and detonated.
Hmm. Now, is there anyone who you know of that may have some evidence that that occurred?
No.
I know,
in fact,
I know it's difficult, but...
No, there's no one that I know of. What led me to believe that was the case was in a DVD that was produced called In Plain Sight, and that was done by the people that run the Power Hour down
mm-hmm.
in Missouri.
Yes.
In Plain Sight, in the original In Plain Sight, there was a quote from a female air traffic controller at Washington Approach who indicated that they had radar contact with American 77, but radar contact had been lost 45 minutes prior to the strike at the Pentagon, and the last known position of American 77 was over the Atlantic. That's why I hypothesized that all three of the airplanes were taken over the Atlantic and destroyed. We know that they didn't hit the Pentagon. We know they didn't hit World Trade 1 or World Trade 2. Those were drones.
Mm-hmm. Okay, That certainly is a possibility. I would add that my research shows that many of the people on the list are still alive. And I'm working on a piece that's going to disclose that. Now, I just report, okay? I don't work these schemes. But here we're going to talk tonight about schemes and scams and really what is nothing more than organized crime. And David, I'd like you to go into how you came about. You started explaining that before we introduced Field to the audience. How you came about uncovering this trail. You have three components basically that are carrying out a scandal of tremendous proportions that's really having an effect on the world economy. And I'd like you to go into that, if you would.
Right, and I think you put your finger on the point there that the greatest or fastest or smartest way to treat this whole thing is as a series of crimes executed by a racketeering influence and corrupt organization. Primarily built around the notion of murder for hire to recover debt. So back in the 90s, around mid-1995, a company called Cisco worked with this British Columbia company I just mentioned on McDonald Detweiler and Associates on the development of what they call a virtual Pentagon. And the idea of that was if the Pentagon took a direct strike, then dispersed over the internet on virtual private networks and intranets, as they're called, the presidential chain of command could be dispersed, a little like ARPA, and the government, at least in its defense of the American people, could carry on even though the Pentagon had literally been obliterated. Now, the problem is that the people who funded Cisco to do that were some of the banks that call themselves the global custodians.
Mm-hmm.
And on the 9/11, the global custodians had a front office on the 79th floor of World Trade Center building number one. And that front office, it was First Liberty Investment Group, which was a front for the Bonanno crime family. Now, this was one floor above the Sky Lobby. So they appear to have paid Cisco and McDonald Detweiler and Associates to build a virtual Pentagon, and they acquired the passwords or encryption systems to that virtual Pentagon using an algorithm called the Tontine algorithm.
Okay.
What that means, Don, is if you take a group of N people in the war game, you can allow K of them, where that number K is smaller than N, to talk amongst themselves using a virtual private network and the Tontine algorithm, which was developed by someone known to Field, a guy called Bruce McConnell, who was head of encryption for the closing years of the Reagan White House, Bush Sr., and the two terms of the Clinton administration, or just towards the end of the Clinton administration. He then quit, and he started a firm called McConnell International, and he appears to have sold the Tontine encryption codes and passwords to the virtual Pentagon to the enemy of the United States, including China and Russia and France, and regrettably certain groups inside Canada who have been plotting or aiming to destroy America for decades. So that was network number one. On the 9/11 war games, there was a group of enemy companies and terrorist organizations in possession of the Tontine encryption codes given them or sold to them by Bruce McConnell. And that backdoored the virtual Pentagon and cut out the President of the United States, who was reading the goat story, as we know. The second network was also developed by Cisco and McDonnell Detweiler in Richmond, British Columbia. And this was the instrument approach procedure, final approach software, that allowed a plane to be taken off its regular en route airway. And there I'm quoting from a press release of May the 3rd of 2001. And this, I believe, was used for the war game by the red team. And if I may, Don, I'd like to flip over to Field because he can describe the maneuvers, the knock-it-off maneuvers that might have tricked the blue team defenders into standing down in the middle of a war game. Can I let Field talk to that?
Yes, sure. Go ahead, Field.
Yes, if we understand this correctly, and we think we do, the red team and the blue team, the red would be the attackers, the blue would be the defenders. For this exercise, the military exercise that was running, there were a lot of exercises running on 9/11, but the one called Vigilant Guardian, I think it was, practiced as Amalgam Virgo, but the Global Guardians named it Vigilant Guardian, and there were others running. But basically, the Canadians were trying to prove to the United States that they could rely on the Canadian air defense people to protect America in the event that the United States Air Force was stood down for any reason. So they stood the Air Force down for a 30-hour period, and the exercise scenario involved flying vehicles attacking some iconic landmarks, and one of which would have been the Capitol and the Pentagon. And so the rules of engagement would have included a knock-it-off feature where if the attacking red team air parties, in other words, Canadian CF-18s or whatever was tasked to attack America on that day, if they got within 3 minutes of their targets, they would be told to knock it off, and that attack would be deemed successful. And there was a gentleman, Captain Gerald DeCanto, in the Navy Command Center on 9/11, who determined that the attacking flying vehicles, whatever they were, did not honor the three-minute knock-it-off rule, and they were pressing their attack on the Pentagon. Captain Gerald DeCanto from the Naval Academy class of 79 was on the phone trying to get authority from his chain of command to deploy defensive weapons at the Pentagon, and he died in his office when something, an air-breathing flying vehicle, came through his office window. And if you believe the song and dance that 19 young Muslim men prosecuted these attacks on 9/11, it's impossible that they could select one window out of all the windows in the Pentagon and fly precisely through that window and take out the Navy Command Center, whereupon the command of the Navy went to a couple of different organizations, one Canadian steamship lines perhaps, and then over to Belgium with NATO. So we lost control of the Navy very briefly, at the same time that the Canadian Air Force was in charge of the North American Air Defense Team, and the name is General Maurice Burrell. And I'll turn it back over to David for the name of the other guy, who I believe was Rick something. He was a major.
Okay.
Rick Findlay. He was in the NORAD command bunker. So, Don, what happened after the Cisco instrument approach procedure software developed by McDonnell Detweiler was used to bypass the American defenders, which were stood down and fly into target? The third network was engaged, and this is an automated loan recovery network. And this is really the, in English we'd say, the meat and potatoes of the attack, because what people like Jamie Gorelick, vice president of Fannie Mae, and Eric Holder, director of Freddie Mac, had been doing, they'd been pumping subprime mortgages into the ghettos, knowing that there was no money coming back because the people couldn't pay. But what they were doing, and this is absolutely brutal, they were buying life insurance on people inside the ghetto who had been entrapped in this Ponzi tontine scheme that was invented in the 17th century and introduced very interestingly into the United States in 1868, Don. And the company that introduced it would go on to become the largest life insurance company in the world. It was the Equitable Assurance Company of the United States. And the law firm that helped them craft those tontine scams was none other than the Sidley Austin Law Firm of Chicago, which employed Bernardine Dorn, the terrorist leader, and later Michelle Obama. So in 1868, the law firm and the insurance company introduced the tontine system, which works on the basis that people drop in a contribution to buy themselves an annuity at a future date, but they don't take the profits out of the fund. The last survivor clears the pot, if you will. The moral hazard, of course, it becomes a tremendous incentive for the rivals to kill each other and be the last survivor. So it was banned in the United States in 1906 domestically. And what we've discovered is that Sidley Austin of Chicago and the Equitable Life Assurance of New York decided that they would export that corrupt racketeering model, the tontine insurance, into Canada and Europe. So what we have on 911 is the unwinding of a number of tontine schemes, which involves the killing of your rivals in order to scoop the pot. And the key law firm that structured tontine insurance frauds was Sidley Austin. And from 1984 to 1988, Sidley Austin interns were handled by a woman called Bernardine Dorn. Does that ring a bell?
Yes, she's from the Weatherman Underground unit, or Weather Underground.
Yeah, she's considered to be the most dangerous woman in America. She was on the run through the 70s and appears to have perfected the funding of the Weatherman terrorist underground movement through tontine killings of rivals. With life insurance taken on the rivals who were killed, and that went into the pool, and it funded the expansion of the terrorist movement. So by 1980, when she and her lover, Bill Ayers, I don't know whether love is the right word because they were into almost everything, but they handed themselves in, and they were deemed to have built a nationwide revolutionary network to bomb and to kill, which, Don, has never been dismantled. So in 1984 to 1988, she was given by the partner of the Sidley Austin law firm the job of training interns, and the last intern she trained in 1988 was a woman by the name of Michelle LaVaughn Robinson, who then took on the job of training interns, we believe in these tontine revolutionary methods, and her name became, in 1991, Michelle Obama.
Yes.
So for 7 years, the world's largest legal practice for hedge funds, and what we're looking at right now is a raid on the major corporate treasuries of the United States through hedge fund manipulation by Sidley Austin. For 7 years, from 84 to 91, 7 years worth of interns processed through Sidley Austin, including a certain Barack Obama, were taught the tontine insurance frauds for destroying American capitalism.
Yes,
so in 1990, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. Finish.
So in 1991, the people who funded Cisco in building the virtual Pentagon and the bypass systems for the to avoid the United States Air Force on 9/11 went ahead and built a Mindbox automated loan recovery system, which means as soon as on the internet there was a signal that a group of people had died for which the tontine insurance was covered, then automatically the Mindbox system over the Cisco network would go into the life insurance files of the people who were killed, extract or present a claim for life insurance, and transfer the assets into the Mindbox pool of money controlled by the Global Guardians. So the law firm that orchestrated the automated loan recovery under the Tontine scheme through 911 was Sidley Austin, the former employer of Michelle Obama, who is now in the White House. And, Don, that network, the revolutionary nationwide network to bomb and to kill, is now centered in the Oval Office.
Yes, I'm inclined to agree with what you're describing. Now, when you mentioned and described element number one, what came to mind because of the time frame was where the money would come to get that kick started. And I know you mentioned basically from Reagan's administration onward. Well, we had Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush at his side. And we know that Bush was trying to get the money that Leo Wanta was secretly raising offshore to the tune of $27.5 trillion that was scattered in offshore banks. Wanta supposedly working as a Treasury agent, and the story is that he was Reagan's most trusted agent, and then you had Bush trying to get the money, according to Wanta. They use the ruse that they destabilize the Russian ruble. And I think that is a ruse. I think actually what they were doing was stealing gold and calling it that, because it didn't, it may have on paper or on TV cameras broken up the Soviet Union. But Russia is as strong as it ever was, if not stronger. And they're actually held in much greater esteem because of the level of financial corruption that's going on here. They're actually using this against the rest of the world, as if they want to have their own new world order here on this side of the planet. They're pushing for a North American Union. You look at what has happened to our real estate market, and you were wise in bringing up Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, because that's at the heart of the research I've been doing for the past 3 years. And it's not just that they gave these loans out to people who they knew were not going to be able to pay for them. It was with the intention of getting them back at bargain basement prices. And all the while these contracts were out there, these securities were sold to the brokerage firms in New York and sold overseas. A lot of worthless paper was sold, and these guys were making trillions and trillions of dollars. It's no coincidence that we had a succession of Treasury secretaries that all worked at Goldman Sachs. We've got another one that just worked at Goldman Sachs. And
Don, if I could just interject, the world's leading hedge fund law practice, which invented residential mortgage-backed securities and commercial mortgage-backed securities in the 70s, is Sidley Austin of Chicago. Right?
Yes,
it's the law firm that puts the package together that embeds an extortionate life or property insurance scam to secure the mortgage that is at fault here. For example, it was Sidley Austin that launched the initial public offering of the Fortress hedge fund, and it was Fortress that sent in the Acorn goons to gut the houses in New Orleans after the Hurricane Katrina had gone through, so they could flip the mortgage on the houses. So they, first of all, they drove the people out of the houses by flooding them. Then they cleaned up with kickbacks to Acorn's goons, you know, that are now being defended by Sidley Austin against embezzlement and racketeering. And then they sold the houses on after driving the people out. So they recovered the mortgage by driving and evicting the people and then flooding mm-hmm. their homes, cleaning them up, selling it on. So Sidley Austin is absolutely at the heart of the mortgage-backed and securities frauds of 9-1-1. For example, on the 6th of September 2001, the Dow Jones Industrial Average in Chicago Futures Exchange started to drop. And through 9-1-1, it went down 25%. That's the entire Dow Jones Industrial Average, meaning they were short-selling the Dow Jones on the 6th of September 2001. They knew. So about $1 trillion of profits was laundered through the brokers on the Chicago Board of Trade and the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. And the lead law firm that was managing those shorts was Sidley Austin of Chicago.
Now, do you think and we're going to get into the specifics, because I'm sure the listening audience is wondering, okay, what exactly are these insurance contracts on these people who are in these plane crashes? We'll go into that in a moment. I wanted to ask you if you thought that they were also playing on let's say, put options on these airlines during the time that they actually have an operation underway.
Yes,
we know
they
did it. Yeah.
Yes. That Mindbox automated loan recovery, it's basically a hedging piece of software. So they're lending money in the anticipation of getting the interest and principal back, and at the same time they're adjusting the insurance on, for example, a plane that has been bought and sold and leased and modified. So the law firm that handles Bombardier's and Boeing's lease arrangements and insurance is Sidley Austin, mm-hmm. Chicago. So what Sidley Austin did, we believe, is that it was operating abusive tax shelters, paid a huge fine of around $50 million that went into this revolving credit account at the Department of Justice. It was buying in planes, modifying them for its clients, with the autopilots that could be flown remotely, selling them on at a tax loss, but keeping an insurance policy on the hull. And they can literally adjust the rate So, or the spread between the money they get back from principal and interest and the money they get back from an insurance claim on the pilot, crew, and passengers in as little as 15 seconds. So in real time, as those planes were heading towards either the drop zone in the Atlantic or if there were passengers in the planes that were heading towards the towers, etc., they knew the people on board through the Sabre booking system, backdoored through McDonnell Detweiler. They could fly the plane and navigate it through instrument approach procedures developed by McDonnell Detweiler, and they could recover automatically the debt through an insurance claim on the passengers through software called Mindbox developed by McDonnell Detweiler. So British Columbia in Canada is absolutely key to the development of the software, the three software networks used on 911.
Okay. Now we know, and again, I mentioned WantaGate, but there have been other cases where this software has been used. Inslaw developed a software that the Justice Department got a hold of and didn't pay for, actually. They stole it. It was called Promise. And the software was intended to handle the bankruptcy cases in the courts. And they were using that. It was modified. Michael Reconosciuto, who had a meeting with Osama bin Laden, Ted Gunderson, Ralph Oberg, and possibly a couple of other people. Bin Laden went by the CIA name or cover as Tim Osman, met at the Hilton in Sherman Oaks, California in 1986. There was an exchange of Stinger missiles, cash, computers, and the software was one of the issues that was discussed. The story goes that bin Laden was taken on a tour of weapons depots and basically allowed to pick and choose what he wanted to be provided to play this role as the international boogeyman. And so once they created this character, then they put his name and image out on the media, playing tapes that turned out just to be signals for events to come. And I had worked out a pattern that I can decipher when an event is going to occur by when they release a bin Laden tape. And in the beginning, it was bin Laden followed by his associate, al-Zawahiri. And so just using basic numerology, you could see when the next event was going to occur. And I could apply it to 9/11 or the London bombings, the Madrid bombings, the Bali nightclub. So once we figured out what was going on, those events sort of stopped. But the airplane crashes all of a sudden increased, didn't they?
Yeah, that's right. But the key is to remember that Sidley Austin and a Credible Life Assurance were working since 1868, Don. And
yes.
From the period 1868 to 1906, about 40 years, they built the world's largest life insurance company using the Tontine insurance fraud. And it's a fraud because it's got a built-in moral hazard, because you make money by killing your rivals.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1908 or 6, it was banned in the United States. They then exported it into Canada and France and China through these major banks. And it's now come back to bite you. For example, I look at John McCain in the Hanoi Hilton in 1967. And I'm just speculating here, but why wouldn't they have offered him a Tontine investment opportunity where if he helped to destroy his rivals or they handed information over to the KGB interrogators that would allow them to thwart the American success after the Tet Offensive, where the fragging incidents, maybe they could build a career for John McCain when he comes back into the United States.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at where Bill Clinton was in 1969, he was in Moscow. So you've got these people who appear to behave as though they were members of a Tontine, i.e. they're scared of each other, they're terrified of each other, But when it comes to the crunch, they'll kill each other in order to be the sole survivor and scoop the pot.
Mm-hmm. Now, you may have just described the reason for the attack on the USS Liberty in 1967. And coincidentally, the investigating officer who was the commander of the Atlantic Fleet at the time was John Sidney McCain, Jr., John McCain III's father.
Right. Yeah.
No coincidence.
No, it's no coincidence. And I think Field's sister, I don't know if he wants to pick up on that, but there is a group of people, I believe, who were inserted into the Washington bureaucracy around the 68, 69, 70 period. And I think at that stage, relatively innocent and young, they may very well have been tempted. After all, Equitable Life sold a lot of Tontine insurance contracts, right, to get to be the biggest in the world. And at first blush, it looks okay. Apparently, American cavalry officers were really into Tontine insurance in the First World War. So perhaps Field's sister and other people, contemporaries, they got into the Washington bureaucracy and they were told, look, we've got a nice annuity scheme where you can get yourself a decent amount of money, but it does involve a bit of competition. So the bureaucrats dog eat dog. If you look at the Ron Brown killing, a lot of United States Air Force people were killed, senior people in the Department of Commerce, some media people, and after he was killed, the top secret patent information inside the Department of Commerce was stolen by Ira Sokovitz and handed off through the Small Business Administration and appears to have been used on 911. So I don't know if Field would like to comment on whether he thinks his sibling might have been entrapped by something like that.
Yeah, I mentioned that earlier, that she may have been entrapped.
Field, we can't hear you. You got to get a little bit closer, please.
Okay, here I am. I mentioned that earlier, David, that she appears that due to her background and the variety of positions she's held there in Washington, D.C., and then the history at the Small Business Administration as it pertains to 9/11 contracting, if you will, I think it's very possible she's been extorted, entrapped, terrified, scared, threatened, whatever, to be a part of this great big mess, which my term would be, this goes back to your Promise software, Don, but the Promise software was being covered by a man named Danny Casolaro, who was writing a book called The Octopus, and unfortunately for Mr. Casolaro, he died of a fatal beer can. He was allegedly in his bathtub having an old Milwaukee beer when he cut himself to death with about 32 lacerations to both wrists. So he was very intent on committing suicide right when he was about ready to wrap up his investigation that touched on a variety of things, including the Internal Revenue Service and the Promise software. But if any of your listeners want to get scared to death, they can read the book called The Octopus, because The Octopus is what appears to be our enemy today, meaning the enemy of the United States of America. It appears to be the enemy that John F. Kennedy alluded to when he said that there was an organization around the world that had its slimy tentacles in everything. And, you know, Danny Casolaro paid, he's dead, John F. Kennedy is dead, and probably the organization that doesn't like to be called the Octopus, but that's exactly how I see them. They probably don't really appreciate interviews on the radio such as this either, Don.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, we talk about a lot of things on this show that they don't appreciate, mostly because we talk about the truth.
Yeah.
And we talk about getting at the truth.
And interesting enough, Don, the octopus, it does have eight legs. There are eight banks, right, with $88 trillion of assets in custody, and people can Google, AIC is the sort of the acronym for assets in custody. So if people Google global custodians, $88 trillion, and AIC, they'll find these eight banks. Now, there are five in the United States and three external banks, Royal Bank of Canada, BNP Paribas, the French bank that handled the UN Oil for Food Program, and the Hong Kong and Shanghai Bank Corporation. And in the United States, State Street in Boston, Bank of New York, Brown Brothers Harriman, and J.P. Morgan Chase in New York, and the most interesting one, I think, and the one that might be the left one, the one left standing, is Northern Trust of Chicago. And Don, the Northern Trust of Chicago owns the mortgage on the Obama mansion, meaning they own Obama.
Oh, it's not Tony Resco.
No, Tony was the broker, right? He found it. Uh-huh. But the guys who put up the mortgage, right, was the Northern Trust of Chicago. And the Northern Trust of Chicago in the First World War had the position, a rather bizarre position, called the Alien Property Custodian. What that meant is that Northern Trust in Chicago had all the patents and copyright material and propaganda films of the Germans in the First World War and probably in the Second World War. So fast forward to the anthrax letters that were sent to the Congress building.
Mm-hmm.
They contain sabotage spore powders, highly advanced militarized version to increase the dispersibility of the bacteria, anthrax bacteria, made probably by Degussa, which is the company that made Kryptonite, I think, for the gas in the Holocaust. And that would seem to have come out of the portfolio of patents in the custody of Northern Trust of Chicago.
Yeah,
and his law firm is Sidley Austin.
Again, yeah. Isn't it coincidental or ironic that you know, we had this anthrax scare, and they were checking mail. They were going to do it, I think, in Lima, Ohio. That was where all the mail was going to be routed to check for anthrax. Like that was really going to work. The anthrax. Actually, it doesn't become dangerous until you open up the envelope. Anyway, I think that was just a ruse to go through people's mail or you know, in other words, they have another pretext to spy on people and possibly steal or intercept important information that might disclose what they're doing. And what you're describing, David, is exactly what occurred in 1933, when Prescott Bush and George Herbert Walker basically were orchestrating the Union Banking Corporation and all these other firms that you named, Brown Brothers Harriman, Kuhn and Loeb. I wrote about that in a piece in April of 2007 that has yet to be refuted. Yet to be refuted. And I identified the family name of the Bush family. And some people say, well, what does it matter? Lots of people change their names. But these people never became U.S. citizens. And they lied their way through everything to get them where they are today. They're still lying. And they lied and murdered. So this is nothing new for these people. They're the professionals at it. And I see it as nothing more than organized crime. They give themselves titles, they give themselves royal bloodlines, and concoct nothing but stories to try to support it. But it's all unraveling. I see it unraveling right now, and they're pretty worried about it because they thought they'd never get caught. That's the thing, and probably never in the history of the world are so many researchers and authors and investigators like yourselves, gentlemen, coming forward with very, very cutting and groundbreaking information on who is doing this. Now, the question would be, why? Is it just for the money? Are these people that greedy that they can't satisfy their lust for mammon?
I would say, in attempt to answer that, there's an organization called the Industrial Workers of the World. They're anarcho-syndicalists, and their spokesperson is Noam Chomsky at MIT.
Okay.
And they were sort of launched in the early 1900s, about the time, in fact, when this Tontine scheme was banned. But the Wobblies, or Industrial Workers of the World, their objective is one big union, one big strike to take control of government and industry. And if you see what Obama's doing, I mean, he calls himself a community organizer, but technically I think he's more of an anarcho-syndicalist. He only knows how to destroy. So he's cleaning out all your major corporations, your banks, your insurance companies, your pension funds, and emptying it into the treasury and centralizing credit, which is what Karl Marx said, you know, centralize credit in the hands of the state. And when he's finished, I believe there'll be only one or two of these eight member banks left standing. And I don't know where you'd like to put your money, Don, but I'm putting it on the Northern Trust of Chicago. And then the Northern Trust of Chicago will have custody of the $88 to $100 trillion, but it will be a pool of money and there'll be no industrial infrastructure left, because they will have shut down General Motors and Boeing and so on. And basically, you're looking at a herd of locusts that are killing their way to the top. And when they get to the top, you know, maybe there'll be one or two banks left standing, and it'll be a Pyrrhic victory. But we have to stop them.
Yes. Now, there are some synchronicities that are occurring in the banking industry. I find it rather suspicious that a company like Deutsche Bank ends up with mortgages across the United States. I mean, every state, probably every town. And they're picking up these properties in bundles of several thousand at a time. And then you have this bailout occurring. Now, the bailout, and it's worth bringing this up, because this is all financial corruption that we're talking about here. We're not just talking about 9/11. There are more plane crashes we could talk about in a moment. But this is a ruse. You're right. It does come out of Chicago. They're actually running it through the Justice Department, laundering the money through Maricopa County, Arizona. Utah is involved. And then, you've got, there's an element of all the publicly owned assets, and this is parks and waterways and things that the EPA moves in to save. Let's say they want to save the wetlands, or they want to save a nature preserve for some wild turkeys or some bullfrogs, and so the EPA moves in and they do a study, and then they steal the money. Oh my goodness, from a perpetual care fund, the cemetery fund, or they'll steal it from the school system. There may be a bond issue, and they create a multiplicity of paper on this, which is again converted into derivatives and hedge funds. The money is shipped offshore, or it had been for a while. Now the rest of the world has gotten wise to this, and they've frozen those offshore accounts. So they needed the bailout for that purpose. And what they're not telling us in the media, because the media is playing a role in this, they're being told what to say. They're run by the CIA and probably the Israeli Mossad, because it's the Jewish bankers and the Jewish media moguls that control the mainstream media. So
I think, Don, if I may say so, we have to keep focused on Sidley Austin with the greatest respect, because Sidley Austin is the world's largest law practice for hedge funds, and what you just described are hedge funds manipulation, event arbitrage, short selling, and so on. And the world authorities in that are Sidley Austin and the president's wife, the first lady, worked with Michelle Bernadine Dorn on training interns in this Tontine insurance scam. So, you know, we can cast the net huge and wide, but we basically should follow the path of the people who got into the White House. Mm-hmm. How did they get there? When you look at them, what are the qualifications? I mean, he was a downtown community organizer. He's never met a payroll in his life.
Yeah. Well, he was put there.
Exactly.
That's obvious. And you see, if they have one of their own there, they're sure that the laws are going to be created, the executive orders, the signing statements are all going to be in their favor.
Right. And I think it's the bank, the Northern Trust, that gave the guy the mortgage that he couldn't afford. And the law firm that trained him in the techniques that date back to the Tontine scams of the 1906 when they were banned. So we've got eight banks with $88 trillion in custody, We got the world's largest hedge fund law practice, and they got their man, and more particularly their woman, she's more dangerous than Obama, Michelle Obama, into the White House. But they're exposed now, aren't they? I mean, you know, they can't camouflage their operations anymore.
Well, then one would ask the question, why isn't anyone doing anything about it?
Can I jump on that one, please, David?
Yes, yes.
let me read you a letter. And this is from a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel to the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, and it's dated yesterday. Dear Chief Justice Roberts, I am very concerned for the future of this once great nation, and as I stated in my letter of 27 November 2008 to the U.S. Supreme Court, it is my judgment that the United States of America is very close to becoming an atheistic nation that has thrown out of life, thrown out marriage, thrown out morality, and abandoned nearly all principles given us by our founding fathers. I have not received so much as a postcard reply to that letter. Is this normal for the Supreme Court that represents all the people of the nation? Without proper action by your court, we have elected and sworn into office a president of the United States that may or may not be qualified to serve in accordance with the United States Constitution. Should that not be important to you and the rest of the bench? A question as to whether or not President Barack Hussein Obama meets the constitutional requirements of natural birth is on the minds of millions of Americans. I am pleased recently to see that many U.S. military generals question this fact in a public investigation by your court. This uncertainty can be resolved by President-elect Obama simply making a verified official birth certificate available to the American public. The U.S. Constitution demands this accountability, and the American public deserves it all. The president is accountable to we the people. Very short, it'll be done here soon. If this constitutional question is not answered, then in effect the United States Constitution will also be thrown out. Are we saying hundreds of thousands of lives sacrificed over 233 years upholding our Constitution can be trumped by a single individual birth certificate? I am proud to be an American, and I have four grandsons in the U.S. military, one who's wounded in Iraq and is training now as a Green Beret, another just finished submarine training and is on the list for the U.S. Naval Academy. One is in the Army through basic training, another in the Air Force who has served a tour in Iraq. They are all proud to serve, and they all had to provide a valid birth certificate, the same as I did in 1952 before they were allowed to enter the service. They wonder why the Supreme Court doesn't insist that the man who is their commander-in-chief does not have to do the same as they. With all due respect, I ask that you demand the entire court investigate and hear this situation and urge all honorable justices to prevent further erosion of the United States Constitution and require President Obama to produce a valid official birth certificate that will satisfy the court or take appropriate action to remove him as president. It is your solemn trust, your duty. I would like a reply on this matter. I will copy this and the enclosed letter to my senators, congressmen, friends, and family and ask that they consider our men and women in armed services and demand the same as I have on the Supreme Court. And if you can bear with me for one more paragraph, this was written by Lieutenant Colonel Dan, and his last name, I believe, is Marvin. Yes, it is. Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin, a Vietnam veteran who was enlisted now in the Air Force, was very impressed by it. His response, not quite as precise, he says, back at you, Dan, I already read your letter you sent me 45 minutes ago, a good letter that this slimy fraud of a Chief Justice will not respond to because he's yet another of the Pope's agents. Roberts, as well as Scalia, are Opus Dei, and I believe they're both Knights of Malta, so don't expect you'll get satisfaction in a reply. I can tell you lots more that is going on in the background. It involves David Rockefeller, Henry Kissinger, George Soros, Zygmunt Bauman, Brzezinski, Lester Crown, Michelle Obama, William Ayers, Bernadine Dorn, the still existing and much more dangerous Weatherman Terrorist Network. And it's signed by a fellow who's a Air Force veteran. I think what you're going to see when you say nobody's going to do anything, I think you're about ready to see the U.S. military demand the chain of command gets either authorized or removed.
Yeah, that's very likely, I'm sure. Go ahead.
Well, I'm seeing a lot of activity. I mean, this letter just came to me about an hour before the show, but I'm seeing a lot of activity trying to get the leaders of the military to demand that the commander-in-chief be proven worthy of the office and qualified for the office, and I'm confident that he's neither.
Well, I agree with you. I've been writing about that for some time, doing the research. What David has described actually rings much truer than what little excerpts I read out of Obama's biography. In fact, I hesitate using the name. I don't think Obama or Satoru or Dunham is a proper name. Likely Rockefeller would be the correct name, which would explain totally why he is where he is today.
Well, you don't the second one, because William Jefferson Rockefeller was the president two administrations ago, and he used
Winthrop's son.
that would be
Winthrop's son. Yeah.
Yeah, fully understood here.
Okay, and I've reported that the Rockefellers actually pay college girls, particularly at Mount Holyoke College, to have sex with their sons so they can keep their bloodlines under wraps and in control. It's amazing what these people do. The level of evil and the level of corruption to put more money in their coffers. Where can they spend it all?
They can't.
They can't, but they'll never understand that. And so, you know, we're talking about something here that definitely is important, because so many people are brainwashed, propagandized, and hoodwinked by the mainstream media to really see what's going on. They want change. We've got more change in the first month and a half of Obama's administration than probably in the past 32 years. They've ramped up the corruption to new levels. And, you know, I'd like you both to comment on that and on the closing minutes that we have here.
Well, I'm very interested in it. Okay, go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, David, I'll be real brief. I'd say they've also ramped down the Dow Jones Industrial Average to 1996 levels. So there's a lot of change going on, and none of it's good. Over to you, David.
Yeah, and we have three revolving funds. You can even check the numbers underneath the Department of Justice in the direct control of Eric Holder, who was the director of Freddie Mac when they were running the subprime mortgages into the ghetto in order to destroy the people who were borrowing. And that gives Eric Holder the ability to finance a tontine contract killing network using revolving funds directly under his control.
Now, David, I'm wondering what you would say to the listening audience. People are hearing all this and they think, my God, you know, things are so corrupt. What can I do? What can we do? What should we be looking for? What can we say? And we know what we can expect, but there has to be some solutions here.
I would endorse that wonderful letter from the military communities, and I would say the best hope now for America is that American senior officers in the military, they ask themselves a question. I think the term is a Hobson choice. Is it a court-martial offense to disobey an illegal order from a legal president, or is it a court-martial offense to obey the reverse? I mean, you've got a horrible situation because it's quite possible you have a usurper in the White House. Is it lawful to follow the orders of a usurper?
Well, I would say no. But go ahead, Peel.
Unlawful order. That's what you've just described, because he's not qualified to be in the position. So if he makes an order, it's an unlawful order. And under UCMJ, United Court Military Justice, I don't believe anybody's required to follow unlawful orders. I'll do some research and report back to both.
Right.
But the
moment you have a virtual Pentagon where, through encryption, an order arrives, perhaps at the senior commander of a U.S. Aircraft carrier, how do they differentiate between a usurper or an alien order coming through lawful channels? This is the huge dilemma for the American military. I mean, that's what happened on 9-1-1. They were getting orders, like the Happy Hooligans. They were getting orders that they didn't have the time to differentiate between a lawful order coming through a virtual president, a virtual Pentagon, and an unlawful one.
Yes,
what a huge problem. It has to be resolved.
Now this whole operation, and you've mentioned Sidley Austin. I wonder how these people feel walking to work and getting on the elevator, looking at the faces of people that work for other firms. Or are they all in cahoots?
I think many of them are terrified because, again, you take this woman, Bernadine Dorn, the most dangerous woman in America. She's a killer, right? She's never apologized, right? Her network is still in place. So there are people in Sidley Austin who came in as naive interns, that they were entrapped by these people. They're probably caught in a tontine. Well, there's only one winner in a tontine. That's the sole survivor.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there is another woman that might want to arm wrestle her for that title, and maybe two. you could use your imagination. I keep thinking of Little Rock, Arkansas, but...
Well, absolutely. The patent lawyer who appears to have managed or brokered the technologies used in the Unabomb.
And that would be?
Hillary Clinton.
Hillary Clinton. So it's no accident, then, that Hillary Clinton was nominated let's say, authorized to become our Secretary of State, then, is it?
No. And the Unabomb started in 1978 when she was promoted to partner of the Rose Law Firm, and she used the Small Business Administration 8A program to broker the development of the QRS-11 gyroscope, missile gyroscope by BEI Industries of Little Rock, Arkansas, which would one day be configured into a triaxial package for the Maverick E missile and included in the dash plane that came down in Buffalo around the 13th of February. The company Bombardier made the plane, but the avionics was provided by Thales, and Thales was the preferred weapon supplier to Saddam Hussein, who helped Saddam develop decoy and drone maneuvers in Iraq during the no-fly period.
Hmm.
And Don, now, you ask what people could do, and I'd say one thing they could do, and you could encourage them to do this if you believe it's worthy, is they could go to CaptainSherlock.com and educate themselves, and they can hold us accountable by, if they see us misspeak, please correct us, or if they see us speaking correctly, please join us. But it's CaptainSherlock.com, and we're making a lot of noise, and we anticipate sending a quitam lawsuit to Eric Holder and see what he does with it.
Yes. Now, I've been to your site. In fact, I've been reading, and I read most of what you have posted on Mother Moose and the Acorn Abortionists.
Yes.
And I recommend to the listening audience, do go to CaptainSherlock.com and download that, or stay on the site and read it. It's got a wealth of information, insider information on this whole process that you're describing, especially from the viewpoint of a pilot who's flying commercial flights and seeing some very strange things going on. My hat's off to you, gentlemen, for that work. Now, you know, I have some questions, and I'm sure the listening audience, that especially those that are familiar with the structure of the banking system and the international element, you know, the elite here in the United States are merely agents for someone else. And yet they've become very wealthy because they've done their bidding. And these bailouts, which are going to these big corporations, are mostly owned and always have been owned ultimately by these foreign entities. Now, you have the Rockefellers and the Bronfmans and the Rothschilds and the Lee family. Are you aware of any special relationship they have with Sidley Austin? Or for that matter, the UN, UNESCO, the FAO, any of those international organizations?
Well, Don, my taste is, going back to your point right at the beginning of the show, you mentioned organized crime. The general process when you're trying to bring a RICO action is, first of all, either in the civil courts or the criminal courts, you have to demonstrate that there is a racketeering influence and corrupt organization, which means it has continuity in time, And it has a particular MO, which might be extortion, arson, murder for hire, or whatever. And only later do you prove a relationship between an individual and that organization. So I think it's a good discipline for us, I think, Field and myself. We tend to focus in that civil case that was filed on May the 1st of 2007. We gave the name of this organization the name of the war game, which was the Global Guardian on 9/11. So I think when they called that war game Global Guardian, in a sense, they gave themselves a title. So they are the Global Guardians. Now, the people who were involved in the planning of that war game, particularly the encryption, the sales of the encryption, they would become members or associates or affiliates of an organized crime group called the Global Guardians. So in the court case that Field filed in Fargo on 1st of May 2007, we made a civil claim, which would be for treble damages associated with 911. But it wouldn't be a criminal case because that would require beyond reasonable doubt by a jury, and they've destroyed so much evidence you couldn't get that. So I think the general remedy, you asked earlier what the public, general public can do, is go to the Captain Sherlock site, look under the Hawks Cafe for the court case, the Hawks Cafe versus the Global Guardians, look at that. And then in a sense, you know what we've done, Don? We're in the court of public opinion.
Yes.
It doesn't really matter how slowly that case goes through the courts, because the court system is bent. But it's how fast or successful we can explain what was done to the general public,
mm-hmm.
which runs ultimately into the billions. I mean, if a billion people understood what was done on 911 was an insurance fraud, it's all over for the bad guys.
Yes. Well, this is why I bring up some of the names I bring up, because they seem to finance the wars. They have no problem financing those. And keeping them going. I mean, for someone to come out at the beginning of, day one of a war, which was an illegal war, wasn't declared by Congress, and say, well, this war is going to take 100 years. sorry, you're not going to be around to see it. But this is an indication of who's behind it. That sort of rhetoric comes from the people that have been doing this for centuries, back to back.
Yeah.
So,
I would say, there is a tontine group of banks now. There's 8 left standing. Within a year, there could be 4. And what's very interesting is to follow the path of the sole survivor, because the sole survivor is pre-selected. They knew they were going to get Obama into the White House in the mid-90s, I think.
Yes, I read a piece where they knew that in 1980, actually. And there was a lady in Russia that,
yes,
that bragged about it.
Don, I have to go, I'm afraid. I have to meet some obligations.
We're at the end of our show anyway, so, I want to take the opportunity to thank you both for coming on again. We have you booked a few more times for the month of March, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Okay. Thank you very much, Don.
Thanks for being on, David and Field. Also, a special thanks to you, and keep in touch. We look forward to your next appearance on Evident Footprints as well.
Okay, I look forward to it as well, and I'll be appearing next time from Kazakhstan, where I'll be flying with Muslim co-pilots around tall buildings without hitting any.
Yes, and they won't have box cutters, will they?
No, and they wouldn't use them anyway because they don't dislike us any more than I dislike them. They're wonderful people, and God bless you for having us on, Don.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and I'm sure the listening audience. And I look forward to your next appearance. So you take care.
Okay, thank you, and good night.
Okay.
Thank you, Don. Thank you. Good night, Phil.
You're welcome. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and our special guest, David Hawkins. You can visit at Hawks Cafe. .com. That's HawksCafe.com. And Field McConnell, you can visit his website at Captain Sherlock. That's written out CaptainSherlock.com. CaptainSherlock.com. And special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Tune in again tomorrow night. We've got a great show lined up for you. In the meantime, I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.